Welcome in to the newest episode of the Hoth Hangout Podcast. Glad to have you here with us, joining us for episode 96 of the podcast. Triple digits is right around the corner. Pretty hard to believe. Before we begin with today's discussion of all things Star Wars Resistance, I want to give you a quick reminder that if you're not yet subscribed to the Hoth Hangout Podcast, check us out on YouTube for the video version of every podcast, as well as all of our reactions to the latest Star Wars shows when they go live. Additionally, you can contact us via email at hothhangout@gmail.com with your Star Wars thoughts, questions, or otherwise, and we'd love to showcase them here on the pod. You can find the Hoth Hangout Podcast wherever you get your pods, including both Apple and Spotify. And if you're listening on either of those platforms or any platform that allows you to leave a five-star review, leave a five-star review on the podcast. We'd appreciate it very much. And it does also allow it to be more easily discovered by other people who love Star Wars as well. We're also on the socials, whether it be Instagram, TikTok, or X, at Hoth Hangout on each of those platforms. Additionally, the link to the Hoth Hangout community Discord server is available down in the show notes of today's episode as well. Check it out, see what it has to offer. Going into today's discussion about Star Wars Resistance, we are teasing you all with the question, did you enjoy Star Wars Resistance for those of you that have seen it? And I guess if you have not seen Star Wars Resistance, what do you know about the show and are you intending to watch the show? Let us know down in the comments or on the socials about today's episode. And as we're getting into that conversation, Joey, how you doing? How was your Labor Day weekend?
Oh, pretty good. It was actually really lazy. This was like the most lazy Labor Day weekend that I've had, and I'm not complaining too much about it. My daughter was a little under the weather, so we had to kind of stay away from things a little bit. But yeah, it was a good weekend. I hope everyone had a good holiday weekend, those who had the day off on Monday too. But apparently you and I randomly decided this was a hat episode. Yep. That you were both wearing hats, and I'm pretty sure Gibbo is wearing a hat as well.
Gibbo, are you wearing a hat? Can you confirm?
Oh yeah, you put me on the spot. No, I'm not. It's not our Labor Day over here.
Maybe next time for next week's episode, which maybe we'll tease extra early for this episode. Maybe we can all three wear hats next time.
Yeah, we'll grill and stuff like that. Get some burgers.
Yeah, exactly. And also, because Gibbo will have a larger role in next week's episode as well, a little bit of a teaser to the teaser later on. So stay tuned to the end of today's episode to find out what we're doing during episode 97 next week. But as was mentioned, we got a chance to... Well, I watched Resistance for the first time. And I know, Joey, you'd seen it before. So kind of different perspectives on it, and excited to talk more about that. Before we get into our discussion of Resistance, wanted to touch, as we do typically here on the pod, on a couple pieces of news in the last week of Star Wars, as well as some viewer comments from last week's episode and the discussion of our polls. So to begin this week's episode, probably the biggest piece of Star Wars news within the past week is that Amanda Steinberg released I wouldn't call it a short. It was shot kind of in that vertical format, but more so just kind of like a video diary, maybe video log of herself, kind of just like having a candid conversation. An Instagram live. Oh, this was on live. Wow. I did not realize that. Thank you. Shout out to Gibbo for the knowledge there in the background. But she released this on Instagram live, apparently. And it was basically like, I watched the whole clip. What was it, like 8 minutes or so, roughly?
8.5 minutes or so, yeah.
Yeah, and she's basically kind of just talking about her experience, not only with The Acolyte, but kind of as it relates to its cancellation and, you know, what she's basically feeling walking away from the experience of being in it, and also just kind of about the experience of it being canceled as a whole. Canceled in the literal sense, not in kind of like the way that things get canceled nowadays, I guess, but... I don't know. What'd you think about this this Instagram live released by Amanda over the weekend?
I think that one of the things that I did really want to hear, you know, first off, was if she was surprised at all that it got canceled. And from that video, she clearly said that she was not surprised. And I don't know if it was due to the, you know, how it was received by the fandom, or if she kind of knew going into, like, I wonder at what point during this journey of the Acolyte did she know, like, I bet you this gets canceled. You know what I mean? I wonder at one point, you know, if that is truly what she, you know, believed, that it was going to get canceled at some point. I just wonder, was it, you know, when she kind of started, when they started off, it sounded like she was hit with a lot of comments, like, really early on, based off of kind of more like racist types of comments towards her and the cast. So I wonder if that's when she kind of thought it was going to happen, or maybe during, you know, somewhere through the season, you know. So I'd be a little bit curious on that. But to have somebody share their experience like this, and I, we've talked about this before with what happened with Kelly Marie Tran during what happened, you know, after The Last Jedi, and the kind of the quote-unquote reception that she got from, you know, the more toxic individuals in the Star Wars fandom. You know, it's good that these stories get out, and I'm glad that she was brave enough to say that going forward. Now, it's unfortunate that, you know, the show is canceled and all that, but I am glad that she was able to speak her piece. There, you know, and I know that there are, you know, people on both sides of the fandom who either agree with her, don't agree with her. It's going to have more talk with it. Unfortunately, at the end of this all, it still remains that it's, well, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on where you stand with the Acolyte, the Acolyte is still going to be canceled, but I am glad that she was able to kind of, you know, wear her heart on her sleeve and let everyone know what her thoughts were going, you know, after the end of all of this.
Yeah, and I think the thing that, like, regardless of how anyone feels about Amanda Steinberg, because, like, you know, people, like, obviously feel, or, you know, feel really one way or the other on her. And I would just say that I would never, like, deny that there's, you know, that she went through that and that was an experience mm-hmm. that she had. And obviously that's like, you know, there are people out there like that. And, you know, those people are obviously not people to be, you know, they're the toxic side of the fandom. Kind of like you said, like, they're not the people who, you know, I guess we would want to be Star Wars fans, really. And so, you know, that was definitely probably something she experienced. And I fully realize and understand that. I think the part that I'm a little more like on her statement is, I don't deny that those things happened. Like, there are hateful people out there. I don't think this is maybe the reason the show was canceled per se. I don't know. It kind of goes back to what you were saying. Like at what point did she start to feel this way? Was Disney already considering canceling it before the reception of the show? You know, there's kind of like lots of variables here that you have to take into account. It's kind of like what we talked about, maybe was it 2 or 3 weeks ago? Or I think when, you know, when executives look at shows like The Acolyte, sure, they are aware of that stuff and it's probably taken into account. But at the end of the day, I think the bottom line is, like, was the show not only something that that people were able to enjoy, but financially, was it successful? Right. That's probably the primary driver. And so, again, while I don't deny that there are, like, prejudiced, hateful people out there who directed comments towards members
they
of
said it
of
to us. Cast,
yeah, right.
And we're nobody. This is the actual actor.
right. And I think that can be true, while the fact that, like, maybe, like I don't know, how much of a say do those people actually have in this? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Are Disney executives sitting in a boardroom thinking, like, oh, people were really mean to our actors, we probably shouldn't do a second season? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
I agree with that. I don't think it's, there was a huge, I'd be curious in what that deciding factor was as well. But I think I don't even think that was necessarily the point of this video. The point of the video is to, you know, show some, you know, show the true colors of some people as well. And the realities that, you know, people of color have, actors of color that, you know, have to go through this type of stuff, you know, and time and time again, unfortunately, especially in this, and it seems like it's in the Star Wars world a little bit more often than other places. I'm not a fandom of all the other ones, so I'm not even quite sure, but, you know, I think that was more of the reason why. Now, and, you know, she was sad that it was obviously canceled. It sounds like she made some good friends there as well, but yeah, at the end of it, it just, you know, I think it was her venting and getting it off her chest and making sure everybody knows, you know, her side of the story as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, and then kind of like in conjunction with her announcement, I mean, I guess in our notes, we have this as our third news segment, but I guess maybe to tie it together with this piece of Acolyte news, Manny Jacinto was also quoted this past week with talking about, I think he was asked by a reporter, like, what's your life goals? Or what's like, what's one of your biggest life goals? And he said, make a second season of The Acolyte. So,
I think this was at a convention that he was asked. He was part of a panel.
Right. Of course, all the fans were probably like, yeah. Because I think he does represent probably like one of, if not the brightest spot of The Acolyte as a show. And he's just like, I like him a lot as an actor. And especially like in his role as Chimera, I wish it could have been fleshed out a little bit more. But anyways, so he would be down for a second season. Again, maybe this is like throwing some newspaper on the fire for like 10 years down the line when they're actually going to do a second season of this show. But who knows?
You know, it reminds me of, you know, when the prequels came out and not everybody was in love with Hayden Christensen and his performances. But within the past, I don't know, 5-10 years, I feel like the Star Wars fandom has completely, you know, taken him in, you know, big old hug for Hayden. Even though those still, you know, things like, you know, I don't like sand, like that stuff is still out there and in canon. But they still, you know, so I think they just need some room, a little bit of a fair, you know, removal of time between maybe The Acolyte and season two of The Acolyte.
Yeah. It's also interesting to think about, like, all the other stuff that's going to take place in the next however long before they even consider making a second season of this show, like in the Old Republic era. I'm excited for more Old Republic stories. But,
yeah.
And skipping ahead to a different era, our last piece of news for today is centered around the New Republic era and a show that many people hold near and dear, The Mandalorian, which, of course, will be, you know, shifting its focus towards an in-theater release during summer of 2026 with the Mandalorian and Grogu film. New news released just a few days ago that Sigourney Weaver will be in the Mandalorian movie. No word yet as to what role she will be playing, but when you have a veteran actor like Sigourney, it just, you know, kind of hypes up the environment going into a movie like this. That's going to be, obviously, I mean, I think this will probably be the best, at least financially, the best performing Star Wars piece of media since, I would say, since The Force Awakens, probably. I'd be willing to bet, but, you know, like I said, this just adds to the kind of the hype going into this film. So, Sigourney Weaver fan, by the way, Joey.
Oh yeah, she's great in everything. Aliens. There's a few older movies I can't remember, but yeah, Sigourney Weaver is a great addition. And I will say I didn't think of this on my own, but imagine Sigourney Weaver as maybe like an imperial officer of some sort. You know,
I could see it.
You know, yeah. So I think there's room for her there. I don't know exactly what role I'm expecting her to be in for the Mando and Grogu movie, but I don't know. I'm pretty excited to see such a big name in there. I will say I remember this show that had Carrie-Anne Moss in it that we were pretty excited about, but she was gone in within minutes of the first episode, unfortunately. But I'm hoping they don't do Sigourney Weaver like that. But no, exciting to have really good actor in this movie. So I'm excited to see what Sigourney has for us in the Star Wars world.
Yeah, that's a good point. Last time we got a big name actor, she lasted about 5 minutes in the first episode of Acolyte. So, no, I think we'll get Sigourney for longer than 5 minutes. But looking forward to seeing her in the Mando and Grogu movie coming out in less than 2 years' time. Man, that still feels like it's forever away, but looking forward to it nonetheless. We do have one comment we wanted to showcase from last week's episode from our very own Spy on Sports, a frequent watcher and listener here of the Hoth Hangout podcast. During last week's episode, we did our tier list of Star Wars planets. And Spy on Sports tier list, in no particular order, consisted of his top 10, which were Mandalore, Mustafar, Coruscant. Specifically, he notes on Coruscant from the Heir to the Empire book. Hoth, Corellia, Bespin, Exegol, Jeddah, which is technically a moon of the planet Na-Jeddah from Rogue One, Scarif, and Aldani. A pretty solid list right
there. Aldani is a good one.
Yeah. And he also adds an honorable mention to Earth, which is the home planet of George Lucas. So. I like that. Shout out to Spy on Sports for the comment on last week's episode, and an early shout out to George Lucas if you haven't ever listened to the last 60 seconds of the podcast when we usually give him a shout out too. So thank you to Spy on Sports for your comment. And those of you listening to this week's episode, feel free to leave us a comment down on the YouTube version of the podcast or anywhere on the socials if you're listening to the audio version, and we'll showcase those comments during next week's episode of the podcast, episode 96. Additionally, from last week, we had the polls on both YouTube and X based off of our Star Wars planet tier list, asking, what is your favorite Star Wars planet? The folks over on YouTube were tied with votes going equally between Coruscant and Naboo, Mustafar receiving 0 votes, and Hoth receiving 1 measly vote, of which I can attest I was the one who voted for Hoth. So it looks like everyone's loving some Coruscant and Naboo. And then likewise over on X, Coruscant actually got 3/4 of the votes over there, Hoth getting 1%. I don't think I voted on the X poll. So someone out there agrees with me that Hoth is the best Star Wars planet. But
guys, Hoth Hangout.
Hoth Hangout, yeah. Shout out to those of you that voted in last week's poll, and take a look at the YouTube community tab or the X account over the X Hoth Hangout account over on the site formerly known as Twitter. Cast your votes in this week's poll and have your voice heard, and we'll be displaying them on next week's episode of the pod. The time has come for some Star Wars Resistance talks. To kind of preface this discussion, again, we talked about this in last week's podcast, but this was an idea we threw around probably for the first time, like, has it been a year, Joey? I don't know.
Probably. It's been a year, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. When we first started doing, like, our podcast ideas Google Doc, like, back in, like, episode, whatever it was, 30, 40 or something like that, this might have been from that original document originally.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, shows come out, and so we cover the shows, and then there's another show, and then the time between is pretty limited, so... Finally got around during this post-Acolyte period saying, you know what, we're going to cover Star Wars Resistance, because you had seen it once before. I had never seen it. And so I really enjoyed my watch through of it. It was something that I didn't anticipate to like as much as I did. But just real generally, what were your thoughts about Star Wars Resistance the first time you saw it?
The first time I saw it, I think we're reading through kind of what you had wrote the notes. You know, it's a very different experience when you have to wait week by week in comparison to binge watching this. This is definitely a show that should be binge watched. I don't think this is a week by week.
I agree so much. Yeah.
I'll tell you why, because I think not increasingly necessarily, but every so often, maybe every other week, every 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I would be like, what was that? I waited a week for this, you know, and you have very high expectations, and you want it to be kind of bangers the entire time. Now, I know these were, you know, over 20 episodes each season. So there's a lot of times where you could just have some filler episodes. So I get that. But if you're waiting week by week, it's not great. When I kind of rewatched a little bit of it this time, I had such a better experience watching through it all. Because I knew, okay, maybe this episode is not for me, but I got to get through like 20, 22 minutes, and then I get to the next one. So so that first time, a little bit more frustrating. This time, I actually really did enjoy it a lot more. I think part of it is a little bit of nostalgia. This came out in, what, 2018 or so, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's been a minute, but it definitely brought me back to that time when I was like kind of excited for this show. And then just kind of seeing these characters again, it was kind of like home. You know, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember Tam, I remember the Dozas, you know, and you know, it was a feel good rewatch for sure for me.
Yeah, I think that is so true. That I think especially the first season, the first like 3/4 of the first season, it really doesn't feel like anything is happening. Like, you know, you're getting to know the characters, yeah, but for the most part, it's just like the plot is not going anywhere after. So like the second episode is probably like where the progression of the plot stops. And then from like episode 2 to episode like 15 of season 1, it's just right. kind of like the adventures of this crew on mm-hmm. this big, massive ship known as the Colossus. And it's a fun show, but if you're looking for something that's like deep characters and plot and stuff, I'm not sure if that's exactly what this mm-hmm. show offers. But to kind of briefly describe what the show is for those who might be unfamiliar, the main character's name is Kazuda Ziono. And if you don't know, he is now, I mean, I think Resistance was technically canon anyways mm-hmm. upon its release, but now he's like really canon because his father was seen at a New Republic Senate meeting or gathering in the second season of the first season, I guess the only first and only season of Ahsoka, around the table where the scene that C-3PO walks into, if that, you know, jogs anyone's memory. So mm-hmm. his father is a senator. He's kind of at odds with his father a little bit, and his father doesn't really even play like that big of a role in the show. But it was also created by none other than Dave Filoni, and was largely inspired by the anime genre, as well as Dave Filoni's grandfather's experience in World War II. And so you really get the sense of, especially like the fighter pilot element. Yeah. Like a lot of this show is about like flying and racing pilots. And really like the overarching plot is that Kaz, as his nickname is known throughout the show, is tasked on this secret mission to investigate the First Order, which is becoming a growing threat in the galaxy. And so the person who tasks him on the mission is actually Poe Dameron. But yeah, this is a show created by none other than Dave Filoni, who, if you don't know, is kind of like the George Lucas protege and more or less kind of like the George Lucas figure as close as possible in modern Star Wars. And I think as recently as like a year ago was promoted to like lead story developer for Lucasfilm. I wish I knew what his like official title, but basically if someone wants to incorporate stuff about Star Wars into their story, they got to consult Dave first is more or less his role. But like you mentioned, yeah, each season is roughly 20 episodes. And so I think it's 21 in the first season and 19 in the second, but for a total of 40. So it only ran for 2 seasons and premiered in 2018. I think went off the air in 2020, I want to say, if I'm not mistaken. But the main cast of the show, like I said, consists of Kazuda Ziono, who we know as Kaz. He's a young pilot for the New Republic and then becomes a resistance spy aboard this massive vessel called the Colossus, where the majority of season 1 takes place, and really a lot of season 2 as well. And then there's what I think is probably the most fun character in the show. His good buddy, and he's a mechanic. His name is Niku Vozo, and he's this Nikto species. And like I said, he's a technician. He's really talented. And I described him as lovably aloof. Like, he's just like very practical and kind of in a way that he's not always getting some of the social cues that other characters are getting, but that's really what makes him, I think, kind of endearing and lovable. And I was surprised, Joey, that when I was reading about him online after the show, like, there's a lot of people that really don't like this guy. And I was like, how? I mean, I get that he's like a Jar Jar-esque character, mm-hmm. but he's so innocent and sweet. He's not like, right. I don't know. What did you think about Niku as a character?
So first of all, his last name is Vozo. Very, very similar sounding to the word bozo. I just wanted to point that out. But I liked his character. I mean, there were definitely points where you're just like, Niku, no, you know, whatever. So for sure, there's definitely I can get that. But I do appreciate the the inclusion of like kind of a neurodivergent type of character who isn't, who doesn't catch all those social cues, who doesn't get all that. So kind of throw that in the middle. And let's be honest, if like you said earlier, if you're looking for like some really deep rooted lore and things like that, this Resistance is just not it for you. You know, this is not what this is for. This is supposed to be a little bit lighter, a little bit funner, more fun. Even like Kaz himself is kind of just sloppy, hot mess, you know, tripping all over the place and, you know, pretty much the comic relief in every, you know, scene that he's in, you know. So I think to expect that to have everybody kind of line up. There are some characters for sure that, you know, kind of has those feels. But, you know, if we're talking about like right off the bat, like Kaz and Niku, yeah, you're not going to find that here.
Yeah, that's fair, yeah. And speaking of Kaz, I wasn't particularly fond of him at the beginning of season one, and he definitely grew on me throughout the show. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I would probably still prefer Ezra, like from Rebels, as a favored protagonist for me personally, but I grew to like Kaz more than I did. Mm-hmm. Like the first two episodes, I was like, I don't know if I can like this guy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
and it definitely grows on you the more you watch. But when Kaz arrives aboard the Colossus, one of the first people he meets is Jarek Yeager, who's the owner of this repair shop and almost like the father figure of our main cast of characters, more or less. He's a former pilot and, well, I guess kind of a current pilot, but they always talk about him as like this great pilot who once was. And he kind of fulfills that father role figure for Kaz, especially in this show. Jarek is probably, if I had to say like who my favorite character in the show is, he would be in the running for sure. Mm-hmm. In fact, yeah. I would probably say that he was my favorite character from this show. I just really liked the role that he presented. I will say season one, this is a theme with a lot of the characters. Season one, the character progression for him feels kind of silly. Like every episode, it's just like him telling Kaz like how he did something wrong and why he's wrong and how he's like not pleased with what he's doing, mm-hmm. but it's okay. And then the same thing happens next episode in a different context. And you're like,
yeah,
can we progress their relationship beyond like
just a little bit?
I get upset that you did something bad. And it does eventually progress. But for the first like 7 or 8 episodes of season one, I was like, man, this is just like Kaz getting sent to the principal's office every episode or something like that. But and then kind of the other last core main member, well, excluding the droids, the last core main sentient species, if you will, of the group is Tamara Revora, also known as Tam, by her nickname as part of the group. And Tam is a mechanic and an aspiring pilot. And she probably has the largest character progression, or maybe just character shift, with her character amongst all the characters in the show. And for the sake of maybe not spoiling anything too much, I'll try to not reveal that, but I might allude to it later in my...
I mean, it was... How many years ago? I think we've...
Is the statute of limitations expired on... Okay, well, I'll just...
You can go.
She, at the end of the first season, she's convinced to basically betray the main cast of characters, and she... Oh, Gibbo, I'm so sorry. I spoiled something for you. And she may or may not convert to the First Order. but didn't hear it from me. So... she has a really cool character progression, probably the best of the show, I would argue. Her role in season two feels the most different from her role in season one of any of the characters. And for that, I also really liked her character. And then lastly, there's an astromech, R1J5, but they call him Bucket in the show. there's actually quite a few astromechs in this show. Actually, mm-hmm. a lot of the, what do you call the BB-8 type models of droids?
Ball droids.
Like, ball droids, there's yeah. Ball like, droids, yeah. There's several of those in the show. And again, they provide the comic relief. And I felt like I liked them, but none of them were like chopper status or R2-D2 status.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, those are elite. Those are the legendary ones.
Yeah.
And especially if you have a BB-8 kind of lingering around, you don't want to upstage BB-8. You know, that's just a bad look.
Right, yeah. He's in a couple episodes of this show at the beginning, too. He makes some appearances and... And speaking of characters that make appearances, there's quite a few other great characters in this show. Some of the members on the Colossus, there's this group of fighter pilots known as the Aces. And one of the fighter pilots is Hype Faison. Another one is Tora Doza, and her father is the captain of the Colossus, Captain Emmanuel Doza. Really, really strong, solid cast of supporting characters. Of these three, Hype probably plays the smallest role, but his role is somewhat more present in the early parts of season one and in the later parts of season two. But Captain Doza of these three was probably the strongest for me personally. Did you have a favorite amongst these three characters, Joey?
I did like, yeah, I think that you're right with the Captain Doza is probably the most important one. But Hype Faison I did like also, mainly because I like the voice actor, Donald Faison. Mm-hmm. If you didn't know that, that's who that is. The he plays, he's on Scrubs, and that's where he's mostly known from. So just kind of hearing him, and he's one of those voices that you hear and you just know that you're like, I can't separate the actor from this voice. So to have this character here, just basically, it's just basically, you know, the guy from Scrubs. That's all I'm thinking of. So, so but yeah, I did enjoy these characters. Tora is really good too. I thought Tora was a good character. Just having the to kind of round out the Aces nicely.
Yeah, yeah. And then there were also kind of characters that tended to err more on the bad side of things, like Sonara San, even though she's kind of more of a gray character, but. Definitely some of the antagonists of this show are Commander Pyre and Agent Tierney, or Tierney, I should say, who are both working for the First Order under Kylo Ren and General Hux, who both make appearances in this show as well. Really fun antagonist characters. Commander Pyre plays more of a role throughout the entire show, and Agent Tierney's role really doesn't pick up until season two. I believe she's introduced kind of towards the end of season one, but. She has a really important role in terms of Tam's conversion to the First Order at the end of season one. And conversely, also Tam's reverting back to being kind of a member of the Colossus crew at the end of season two. Also kind of a spoiler, sorry. and then you also get the classics like Poe Dameron makes a couple appearances. General Leia Organa makes a couple appearances. Never for any really prolonged amount of time, but it kind of is one of those like, name drops like, hey, here you go. Pretty cool, right? And speaking of Poe, Oscar Isaac plays him in this show. Mm-hmm. But he actually reprises his role from the sequel trilogy. He's in four episodes, and there's lots of other really fun, like almost Easter egg character actors, or voice actors, I should say, in this show. Dave Filoni plays Bo Keevil, who is probably the quietest and least known member of the five Aces. Like, he hardly speaks at all through this entire show, but he's in 10 episodes, or at least the voice credit is in 10 episodes, but he never has like quite the prominent role that a lot of the other Aces have. That's probably done by design, if I had to guess. I could see Dave being like, I don't need to have a large role. I just kind of think it'd be cool if I was in this.
Can you imagine he just says like, yes, and then voice credit.
Yeah. I'm sure there were several episodes where he had like a one-liner, like literally one word. But Elijah Wood plays another one of kind of the lesser antagonists of this show, Jace Rucklin, who is a member of the Colossus ship and then also turns to the First Order and is a much more prevalent character during the second season of the show and becomes kind of like the, you know, like the mini bad guy, if you will, like Kylo
the guy
Ren's
that you
role.
like to hate. The guy that you like.
Yeah,
to
yeah,
hate.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Like that, Kylo like Ren's one, role in Force Awakens,
or the one in who's that one dude in Andor that we kept?
Oh, Karn.
Karn. Yeah, yeah. It's him. That's him.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't get a weird romance at the end of it, though. From what I remember,
no weird romance in this show, believe it or not. But Gwendolyn Christie reprises her role as Captain Phasma. I believe not in the second season. I think Gwendolyn Christie only did the voice acting for Phasma during the first season of this show, which would also make sense because the show concludes at the, I think, the beginning of Rise of Skywalker, which if you've watched the sequel trilogy, you know, Phasma's not around during that time. So just we're loading this podcast with spoilers.
I'm curious if... If she had more lines in Resistance than she did in the sequel trilogy.
Ooh, someone out there, I'm sure, knows that nugget of information. That'd be fun to know. Sam Witwer, the voice of Darth Maul in the Clone Wars and the voice of Starkiller in the Force Unleashed series, plays Hugh Scion, who's kind of one of Kaz's buddies. We see him, I think, once at the very beginning and then once at the very end of the show. He's credited with three
episodes. Isn't there a Darth Scion also?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's still Legends technically, but there is a Darth Scion, yeah. And then, of course, the great Anthony Daniels does make an appearance in one episode as the voice of C-3PO. So
you can't have Star Wars without Anthony Daniels as C-3PO.
Yeah. And there was like four or five others. I was telling you guys before we started recording, I could have put like four or five other like well-known actors on here as like, you know, one or two episode credited people. So there's quite a fun list of people in this show. But just again, briefly to kind of recap the arc of the show, season one begins about 6 months before The Force Awakens. And kind of that 6 month time period is the perhaps less than stellar plot progression portion of the show, where it doesn't feel like anything is really happening that's profound. But by the end of season one, where it starts to pick up, it is crossing over with The Force Awakens. And you actually get to witness one of the big events of The Force Awakens, the Osnium Prime. You actually get to see that in animated form in this show. So that's cool, kind of getting to see,
and
kind of like with Clone Wars did with Season 7 with Order 66, like a different perspective on it.
Right, and it should be known that Kaz is actually from Hosnian Prime, right?
Right, yeah, that's his home planet. And so he thinks, like, maybe his parents have perished when he sees it happen. That was one part of this show that I don't feel like the gravity of the situation was portrayed super well in the moment it happened. I was like, Kaz, your entire planet just blew up. And for all you know, your family just like was just perished. Like, and he's like, oh no. Like, I hope they're all okay. You know, and I was like, Kaz, this is more serious than you're making it seem. So, but anyways, kind of like back to the trajectory of the show. Season two picks up literally right at the end of season one. There's no time jump or anything like that. And it begins to cross over with the events of The Last Jedi. And by the completion of season two, we're actually at the events leading into The Rise of Skywalker, as evidenced primarily by Kylo Ren's inclusion into the end of the second season, when he's now being referred to as Supreme Leader after his slaying of Supreme Leader Snoke in The Last Jedi. So, again, Osevens. Most underutilized character in Star Wars history, perhaps? I don't know. But, so anyways, that was kind of like a brief synopsis overview of the show, in case you've never seen it. My criteria for reviewing this show going into it kind of focused on, mainly on writing and storytelling, and then kind of secondarily on production quality. And then lastly, kind of just on like personal enjoyment and entertainment quality. So I guess most of what I had to like think about it after the fact was about the writing and the storytelling, kind of consisting of the plot, the character development, and the dialogue. Some of this we've already said, but I'll reiterate some small points. As I said, it takes place on this massive mobile aircraft called the Colossus, which is a refueling station located on Castellan, which is this ocean planet. And it's a really fun setting. I think the setting is one of the strongest parts of this show. Did you like the Colossus as the setting, Joey?
It reminded me of something like Top Gun, where like it you know, you're kind of on this little community on this, you know, ship, basically in the middle of an ocean world, like you said. So you kind of had to get along, or if you didn't, you couldn't really escape the people you didn't like. You know, just it has that little fun setting, like you said.
Yeah, it's like this enclosed world that feels a little bit bigger than it probably actually is, just because there's so many episodes on anyways. But yeah, I like the Colossus as the setting for the show a lot. I think it's one of the strongest attributes about the show. Racing, as you find out towards the very beginning of the first season, is really big on the Colossus. So if you love the pod racing scene in Phantom Menace, you're going to love the first like 5 or 6 episodes of Star Wars Resistance. I was like, okay, I get it. Like, we're pod racing, basically. This is a lot of the show in the early going is just racing. But it kind of sets
I feel like this would be a really good video game, you know? When they were going through all the races, and because they're basically like these huge, I don't want to call them like hoops, but a kind of like hoops that, you know, essentially they have to go through. Reminds me of Fall Guys, you know, the hoop. So you got to jump through them to get points, or, you know, that's how you get fast or whatever. So, I did like this. I think I like this a little bit more than pod racing. I know it is the animated version, but I think I enjoy this a little bit more.
It would be a really fun video game, like you said. Hey, we gotta get the Disney folks on that. But one of my, I guess, more minor criticisms about the show is the title of it is Star Wars Resistance, and it overlaps largely with the sequel trilogy. And so you might like go into the show thinking, oh, this is going to be like how it connects to the sequels. This whole show is going to be about like sequel trilogy stuff and like the resistance growing. And it kind of is, because Kaz is functioning as a spy for the resistance during the show. But more or less, it's like, all right, here's Poe Dameron at the beginning of season 1, and we're going to drop him in, and then he's gone by like episode 3. And you're like, okay. And then from that point on in season 1 until like the last 2 or 3 episodes, it really doesn't feel like a resistance show. It kind of feels like a Colossus show. Like, they're on this refueling station. They're he's working for the resistance, but there's no direct, like, obvious correlation, at least consistently throughout the plot. So that would be a minor criticism, I think, just the name of the show. Because it took place in the sequels, it didn't always feel like it was about the resistance more often than not. Even though, like, everything he was doing was because he was working for the resistance. So, I guess more of a minor criticism in that part, but something I noted. And when you talk about the show's dialogue, though, it has a... the show is made for kids in a way that... I think Clone Wars and Rebels might feel like it first, but Clone Wars and Rebels both feel like they progress into kind of more mature themes as you watch more and more of the show. Resistance never really has that feel to it. It kind of just feels like more of a traditional kids show through and through. Like, in other words, Clone Wars kind of feels like that, like, 12 to 16 year old audience, and Rebels feels like the 12 to 16 year old audience, even though both are enjoyable by adults. This feels kind of more suited for like that, like, 8 to 12 audience, but it is also enjoyable by adults, just not in the same way perhaps that Clone Wars and Rebels was. So I think oftentimes the tendency with the dialogue is that it comes across like a little bit silly. And in the moments that should be kind of serious, it's like, I appreciate what they're trying to do there, but it doesn't feel as serious as it probably could or should, because it has that, you know, I guess more silly, humorous tone for many parts of the show. But did you get any of that vibe, or did you have different thoughts on that?
The way I ever, you know, grade these types of things is if you could put like a 5-year-old and watch the show, not having a full understanding of Star Wars or anything around it, but if they find like a character silly, and you know how like when kids find like a character silly, they just laugh their head off. I can imagine that happening a lot in this show, you know, where in Clone Wars and in Rebels, you wouldn't really be able to find that. But if you got somebody like Kaz and Niku kind of at the forefront, you could easily find like a 5-year-old to watch the show and just kind of point and laugh and, you know, like, oh, he's so silly. Like, that's the feel. But, and you know, kind of what you're saying, when you have a more serious theme that comes up, something like Starkiller Base just completely annihilating Hosnian Prime, it's too far of a leap from this silly moment to these really, really impactful moments in Star Wars, you know? So then it just feels like super unnatural. And to bridge that gap, they try to not make it too serious, you know, but at the same time, like you said, I mean, that's your entire family that's probably gone. Everyone you know, probably gone, you know? So I think that's a fair criticism to have about this show. You and I have not watched it, but, you know, we talk about, like, Jedi Young Adventures. Like, at some point, there's going to be some serious things that happen throughout the universe. Have they crossed those? How is that going to be looked upon? You know, so, as much as I did enjoy, like, kind of the... I remember this going in, watching this the first time through, is that at some point I made that shift and I said, this is not the show that's called Resistance and it's going to show everything about Resistance. It is literally a kid's show that's set in that time period. And that happens to be, you know, that happens to have somebody who is part of the Resistance. The only thing really Resistance about this is the First Order is against them. That's pretty much, that's kind of what I feel.
Yeah, I feel the same way. One of the kind of notable things about the characters of this show for me is, like you said, they have the depth that you would expect for a show that's trying to reach a younger audience, but they don't feel like they have a ton of growth like we've seen in previous Star Wars animation. Like the arc of Ezra Bridger's growth in Rebels, or the arc of Ahsoka's growth in Clone Wars. Like, you can look at that character in season one of their respective shows and then, like, three or four seasons later and be like, wow, that's, like, a different character almost. You get [S2] Right. [S1] To the end of season two of Resistance, and for the most part, like, everyone is pretty much the same character they were at the beginning of season [S2] Mm-hmm. [S1] One. I mean, maybe Tam is an exception to that, but, you know, she kind of went through her arc and then ended up more or less back at the same place she was to begin with. So, like I said, It's likable characters for sure. I enjoy the characters. They don't have a ton of growth to them. So I guess the way I would summarize the plot as a whole, and really just the writing and the storytelling, is that it's very slow in the beginning, and it gradually picks up as you move throughout the show. I think, again, it lacks some of that character depth, like we've seen in previous animated Star Wars projects. It is a smaller story, I think, overall. Mm-hmm. The stakes don't feel quite as big. But for what it is, I thought it is enjoyable to watch. I really just appreciated what the show was going for. And even if it's not exactly the same audience that, you know, maybe Rebels and Clone Wars was going for, I think it achieved what it was trying to do. So that's kind of, I guess, what I would think about the storytelling and the writing. Did you have any storytelling or writing or plot points in particular, like stepping back from the show, that you thought, you know, that again, stepping away from it, you're like, this is how I feel about the plot as a whole?
Yeah, and again, you know, watching this again and watching it in the way of like kind of binging through it, I would agree, kind of slow in the beginning. But one thing I wonder about, because this, I think this was like other shows, like canceled. It wasn't like this was meant to be two seasons, you know. There was more to the story too. So I'd be curious in what those storylines are. But yeah, unfortunately, we don't get to see those. And that was what 2019 or so, the last probably episodes of this. Mm-hmm. So I would be interested in seeing that, you know, maybe flesh it out. Someone like Kaz, I would be actually kind of interested in like live action. Like how would you make that, you know, that conversion over? So what you were saying, like the Clone Wars characters as well as the Rebels characters have a little bit more, they had more time to actually have more development. But I got to say, like you said, you know, after two seasons, you kind of, there wasn't a lot, you know? So whereas something like Acolyte, I know we're going back to that, something like Acolyte, you literally had one season and, you know, there's nothing more, you know. So I feel like at least with that, you had some character progression. And so you had a chance here with Acolyte. But with this one, you had full two seasons. It didn't pan out the way you wanted to, so you kind of had to cancel it.
Yeah, I think they left off season two kind of with the, we could end it here, but we could pick it back up sort of mentality. And then it was canceled, so... I think they would have, like, in the grand scheme of things, if it would have been greenlit for another season, I think that would have been something that a lot of people would have been excited about. I probably would have been excited about it if I was watching it at the time. So kind of the next piece of this show that I wanted to focus on, as I mentioned earlier, was the production quality, kind of like the animation, the voice acting, kind of everything that is encompassed there. The main point here to note is that the show, as we mentioned before, Dave Filoni drew a lot of inspiration from his experience of anime with this show. And so the show takes a unique animation approach, and they use what's called cel-shaded 3D animation, which is essentially this highly stylized visual art form. And it uses computers to give 3D characters kind of this hand-drawn look, this more 2D appearance. And so if you're not used to kind of the way characters have a tendency to look in anime or even some video games, it does look very different than like something like Clone Wars or Rebels, for example. However, if you do come from a background where you watch a lot of anime, you might actually like the appearance and the style of the animation in this show. However, if you're not familiar with that, it might come off as off-putting. And I think for a lot of people, when this show came out, that was sort of the vibe they had about it, that the animation feels really funky. And I can admit, even as someone who's seen a little bit of anime, it took me probably like two or three episodes of this show's animation to feel like I wasn't noticing it every single moment of the episode, if that makes sense. So what did you think about the particular animation style that they chose to use with Resistance?
I thought it was fresh. I thought it was new, kind of, you know, in especially in the Star Wars world. I don't remember. I don't think the had Visions come out by then. I don't think.
Or
had Vision Season 1 come out yet?
That was right around the same time. I want to say Vision Season 1 didn't come out till 2019, though. But I'll check that.
So I think, you know, going into it, you know, if it was truly 2018, you know, when this did come out, you know, late 2018.
2021, by the way, for Star Wars.
Oh, 2021. Okay, 2021. Yeah. Okay, so definitely the first of, you know, of all of Star Wars animation to kind of have this style. I really liked it. I could see how it could be off-putting at the same time. I don't come from an anime background necessarily, but or at all, I should say. But just to see how, you know, just kind of a different world, a different perspective of Star Wars. I thought it was just cool kind of seeing, you know, characters like Poe Dameron and BB-8. And, you know, obviously with droids and things like that, it's a little bit easier to get away with it. But when it's actually human characters, you know, aliens and creatures and stuff like that, it's going to look a little different from what you're used to seeing, whether in Rebels or Clone Wars, or especially in live action. So I understand that, you know, maybe people didn't like it. I remember my one buddy wasn't a huge fan of it either. But to have that different eye, it's kind of fresh, like I said, to bring it into Star Wars.
Yeah, it almost has... I don't know if you're familiar with what JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is, but there's an anime called JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And the first time I saw this, I was like, whoa, that the animation style is so similar. It's that same cel-shaded 3D animation. But
and I gotta imagine it's not cheap to produce this. So I wonder if that is a lot of the reason maybe you don't go on with a season 3.
Yeah, it could be. And I wonder, like, what the cost differential is there between, like, hand-drawn animation and kind of this, you know, computer-generated 3D, but designed to look like 2D at the same time style of animation. That'd be interesting to note. But overall, I got more accustomed to it, and it didn't seem to, like, play a role as much as the show went on in my ability to watch it as it did early on in the first season. In terms of production quality, the only other point I wanted to make is that the voice acting, I think, is one of the best parts about this show. I think most, if not all, of the characters are cast really well. Just the overall talent level of all the actors that are involved in this show is really cool. Just looking through the IMDb, it's like, oh my gosh, wow, he's in this? Whoa, she played that role? You're like, you keep scrolling and you keep finding another person in the show. It's like, oh my gosh, wow. This is awesome. So overall, the production quality, I think, while highly criticized, is something that was off-putting at first, and then I grew to kind of actually like it as the show went on. And yeah, so
kind of, I wanted to make one quick point about the voice acting. I mean,
yeah.
And, you know, this is me, you know, this is important to me. Highly diverse cast. Many different, you know, people of color that are included in this particular show. So I really enjoyed it. And I got to say, Star Wars animation kind of always knocks it out of the park with the voice acting, you know. So whether it's Clone Wars or Rebels or, you know, or Resistance, whatever, I feel like they always knock it out of the park when it comes to the voice acting. So they were definitely up to par with this. And that was one of the things I really enjoyed during this rewatch, kind of reliving the, you know, some of these scenes with Kaz, with Tam, with the Dozas. You know, it was just a really cool going back to it again and kind of seeing through their eyes and through this animation style too. So I did enjoy the production this time around as well.
Definitely. Kind of the last area I wanted to focus on before we just get to kind of like how much we both personally enjoyed the show is how the show was received by viewers when it was released and how it continues to be received today. Initially, it was met with a pretty critical reception largely in part to kind of, as we mentioned, this different style of animation, which was still very new at the time. The cel shading, as we referred to it earlier, often used in anime. And of course, the other main criticism was that unlike Rebels and Clone Wars, it did not draw to older audiences in the same way that those two shows did, even though you could make the case that all three of those shows are marketed more towards a younger audience. This show feels like it's marketed towards an even younger audience. Those were kind of the main criticisms with the show. Surprisingly, when you look this up on Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 92% Rotten Tomatoes rating. This is, of course, the critic rating, which I was shocked it was that high. I was probably expecting something more in like the 60s or 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But then I kind of dug a little bit and I was like, well, technically you only have to give something, I think, it's a 6 or 7 out of 10 for it to be considered fresh. And then that vote counts toward the 92, like the percentage that people. So like there's a little bit of a caveat in there, but more or less most of the critics really liked Star Wars Resistance. However, the same cannot be said for the audience, which has a 45% rating. So quite the discrepancy between the critic and audience ratings of this show. Do with that whatever you will, but I probably fall, kind of, not to give too much away about my personal score of the show, because we'll talk about that here in about 2 or 3 minutes, but I kind of fall probably somewhere between these two. Definitely more close to the 92%, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But I was maybe equally as surprised, with the current like culture of Star Wars and just kind of like looking to dislike something, I was less surprised by the 45% audience score, but both scores, I guess, surprising in that own way. And then over on IMDb, it was a 5.3 out of 10, you know, barely higher than the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. What'd you think when you heard these scores or saw them for the first time, Joey?
Seeing them here right now, that lines up from what I remember when it first came out too. So not a huge surprise. You know, if you're looking for very deep lore, if you're looking for that type of Star Wars, this isn't it. You know, this is definitely an introduction to Star Wars for, you know, ages 8 till 11, you know, and that's pretty much the purpose here. And especially since it happens during the sequel trilogy, and we know how people feel about the sequel trilogy. So, it wasn't, you know, lined up for a huge success, unfortunately, especially with the fandom in the state that it is. So, personally, though, I would be in your same camp. You know, if it's true that you kind of just need to give it a 6 or 7 to make it fresh, I would probably, you know, be in that camp as well.
Yeah, that's about where I am too. And kind of on that note, moving into just how much we personally enjoyed the show and our engagement levels with it. As we've stated, it was clearly made for a younger audience. I would make the case it's still enjoyable for what it is in a way that maybe a lot of people wouldn't resonate with that same fact. But I actually really enjoyed this show, again, for what it is. The overarching story does feel slow at times, especially at the beginning of the first season. But it picks up eventually, and the progression begins kind of mainly towards the end of season one. And season two feels a little bit more of a, you know, a faster paced, especially more so than season one. So it was fun to see this crossover of sequel era characters, kind of the cameos from characters like Kylo and Princess Leia, or I guess General Leia at this point. You know, Poe Dameron. And so, you know, it has that element in it. But again, nothing about the show feels particularly resistance, more or less. I mean, he's working for the resistance, other than, like you said, kind of just the opposition of the First Order throughout the entire show. So having said all of that, if I were to give Resistance a score just purely on my enjoyment of the show, I'd probably go about 7. I would even be tempted to like bump that up to a 7.5 or 8, I think, by the way that the second season concludes. Because when I gave that score, I actually still had like 5 episodes left of season 2, which I have now watched. So I felt pretty satisfied by the end of the show. So I would even say like 7.5 or perhaps even 8. Again, for what it is, it fulfills the role it was meant to fulfill. And I liked it a lot. So how about you?
I'm around the same boat too. I would, you know, I'd probably stick it with the 7. It was enjoyable for what it was, but did it really add a lot to the storyline of Star Wars? Not, you know, was the story needed? You know, that's the important part. And especially after 40 episodes, is that, you know, you really want something real juicy, something really, really good to stick your teeth into and just be like, yeah, this is Star Wars. This is incredible. The Resistance might have been, I don't know, maybe the fans didn't want to watch it, so that they had to resist. Maybe that's what it was. But you know, I think the, it was it, like you said, it was fine for what it was. And going into projects like this, you never really know what to expect. You know, you're not quite sure. I mean, I think of like something like Skeleton Crew, you know, coming up in later this year. We kind of really don't know the feel. We kind of have an idea. We know it's Goonies-like. We have, you know, an idea of, you know, that feel, you know, that era of time. So we kind of get it. But at the same time, that could end up like this. Honestly, it actually could, just kind of in the live action form. I mean, the majority of the cast are children, so it would make sense if it was more geared towards children, you know, where a lot of people are like, well, what does this mean in the grand scheme of the universe? It might not mean anything, you know, it might not be a huge thing. So I'm, you know, I don't want to go out a little too far off of a tangent there, but yeah, for me, I think I'd give it a 7. It was enjoyable for what it was. I wouldn't, you know, I enjoyed the rewatch. It was great. I don't know if I'd rewatch it again, but you know, it was just it's a good feel good show. And it has its moments and it's fun.
Yeah, I like that. And on that note, those of you listening and watching, again, our viewer question of the week this week, have you seen Star Wars Resistance? And if so, did you enjoy the show or what were your thoughts about it after having seen it? So let us know down in the comments or over on the Hoth Hangout socials, and we'll display those responses on next week's episode of the podcast, which I should mention, next week's episode of the podcast, as we alluded to at the beginning of today's episode, is our third or fourth, is it our fourth installment or third of Star Wars trivia?
I thought it was third
installment. Thank you. Third installment of Star Wars trivia. As it transitions from today's episode into next episode, kind of a nice segue. We talked about a animated Star Wars show today. So next week's Star Wars trivia is all things Star Wars animation. And I can already tell you ahead of time, if there's any question about Young Jedi Adventures on that episode, I will not know the answer. So tune in next week, play along with us as we engage with Trivia Master Gibbo as he leads us through Star Wars trivia. This time it's everything animated. So I hope to catch you all during next week's episode, episode 97 of the podcast, where we will be engaging in trivia. And somewhere on the screen at this point, you can find a link to a playlist for our previous trivia episodes if you care to challenge yourself in that regard as well, with some trivia from past Hoth Hangout episodes. So thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Hoth Hangout podcast. As a quick reminder, if you're not yet subscribed to Hoth Hangout on YouTube, check us out there for the video version of the podcast as we progress closer to the 500 subscriber mark. Thank you to all those of you who are subscribed to the Hoth Hangout channel. And again, check us out there once Skeleton Crew goes live again for our reactions to those episodes as well. You can contact us via email at hothhangout@gmail.com with your Star Wars thoughts, questions, or otherwise. And we'd love to showcase them here on the podcast. The podcast is findable anywhere you get your pods, including both Apple and Spotify. And if you're listening on either of those platforms or any platform that allows you to leave a 5-star review, we'd appreciate you leaving a 5-star review on the podcast. It allows the podcast to be more easily discovered by other people that love Star Wars as well. We're on the socials at Instagram, TikTok, and X at Hoth Hangout on each of those, as well as the Hoth Hangout community Discord server, for which the link to find that can be found down in the show notes of today's episode as well. Joey, any last thoughts on Star Wars Resistance today?
Resistance, only 2 seasons. I you know, if we could have had another season, I feel like we would have had a lot, you know, there's a lot more story to talk about. I think it would have been one more season. Maybe we can get, maybe Manny Jacinto can also have another season of Resistance along with his extra season of the Acolyte. So no, it was good. I enjoy it, you know, for what it was. Like we said, will I watch it again? I don't know. But I did like revisiting these characters. I did enjoy. I'm glad you finally watched it because we've been talking about this for a year now. So I hope you were able to enjoy it too.
Everyone's, yeah. that, what was it? A year between when we first brought it up and when we finally got it to happen. So glad we finally got this under our belt. And oh, by the way, I was going to share. I got a new little. It's Boz Ness. If you're watching the video version of the podcast, my fiance was in a thrift store, and she saw this and was like, "Hey, I'm gonna get that." So
nice,
newest addition to the collection, Boz Ness. By the way,
watch some of the Resistance show with you as well?
We watched most of it together, actually. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I actually listened to a good majority of Resistance in a 15-hour car ride that I was driving, and so
that's nice.
That was an experience. So
yeah.
Anyways, so shout out to George Lucas. Shout out to Dave Filoni. Shout out to Gibbo. Thank you for producing today's show, video, and assets. Gibbo, who is also nicknamed the Colossus of the Hoth Hangout podcast. So.
Strong man. He's a strong man.
We appreciate you all so much for listening to this week's episode. Hope to catch you all in next week's episode for some Star Wars trivia, the animated Star Wars version. Last shout out to Niku Vozo because he's just that cool of a character. I really, really enjoyed him. He was fun. So once again, thank you all for listening. We'll catch you next week. Hopefully have a fantastic rest of your morning, evening, or afternoon, whenever you may be listening. And until next time, may the Force be with you.